Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This pod is brought to you by Brand MN. They're a Minnesota company that makes awesome shirts and more for Minnesotans. So odds are, if you're listening to this podcast, which you are, they've got something that you'll love. I personally like the Scratching Post shirt. It's a picture of a cat scratching on the WNBA championship trophy. It's for the Minnesota Lynx, and it can be yours. All you have to do is go to brandmn.com and use the code AWAW for 15% off your order. Your closet will thank you. Welcome back to the A Wolf Among Wolves podcast. I am your host, Brendan Hedke. You can find me on Twitter at @B_HedkeNBA. You can find the show on Twitter at @AWAW_podcast, and this is part of the A Wolf Among Wolves podcast network. You can find the A Wolf Among Wolves blog at awolfamongwolves.com or at @AWAWblog on Twitter. And today I am joined by Jack Borman, one of my good friends, and now he's writing over at Canis Hoopus, formerly was at Dunking with Wolves. So how's it going, Jack?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm just trying to survive a little bit, and I don't know, the heat and wind has been getting kind of crazy around my area, so.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad that it's hot instead of dealing with like cyclo bomb weather. So I love it.
Yeah, so things seem to hopefully be settling down a little bit in our state, but a lot's still happening. But today we're going to try and focus some on some more draft stuff. So last time Jack joined me, we talked about Trey Jones and who else? Oh, Tyrell Terry. And now we're going to be going into two Florida State players that I think would be pretty good players to maybe have the Timberwolves look at for this draft, whenever the draft does happen. And that's Devin Vassell and Patrick Williams. So I think we'll dive into Vassell first off. So what are your initial thoughts on Devin Vassell, or Vassell? I don't really know how to say it for sure. But.
So my initial thoughts on him, just being able to look through a couple of games on Synergy, was that he's a really, really solid outside shooter. He's got a really good high release point that makes it really tough for especially smaller defenders to close out. And because he's really rangy, and just versatile on the offensive end, can play the two, can play the three, can play the four, at least at the college level, he finds himself with shorter guys defending him a lot, and shot the ball really, really well, especially with the smaller guys on him, and shot 41.6% from three, which is really, really encouraging. But just a high-level shot maker, can make a ton of different shots, whether he's off the bounce, flying around screens, spotting up, or fading away on a lot of dribble drives. I noticed he really solid doing that as well. And then on defense, you know, I think Vassell's probably my second favorite defender in this draft, outside of or behind Onyeka Okongwu, just because he's a really smart off-ball player that just is really timely. Knows when to be aggressive, when to not be aggressive. Really smart in terms of when to dig in certain actions coming through the lane, and when to kind of, you know, stay in the help as opposed to follow his man. And then on the ball, just really, really smart, physical, and does a really good job with his hands, like I said. So, really, really great two-way player that I think will have a long, long career in the NBA.
Honestly, like, kind of that prototypical, like, you hear it all the time and people get labeled under it, and sometimes they don't really deserve to be labeled as this, but I think Vassell is a guy that should be labeled as like a 3-and-D guy, because right now that's what he is. He has that room to grow into more of an offensive threat, but right now he is more of like a 3-and-D guy. And for those of you who are listening who haven't really looked at Vassell at all, he's like a 6'6 shooting guard, maybe small forward. And he's from Florida State. And he's got like a 6'10, 6'11 wingspan. Like his arms are just super long, but he's also really skinny. He's like 190 pounds. So if you look at that frame, just a lanky, like shooting guard, small forward type player. And yeah, I think 3-and-D wing is probably the best like archetype of a player for him, or like the best way to really like describe him without watching his game at all.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the best way to describe the way that he plays would probably be like if NBA fans know Trevor Ariza, Trevor Ariza is probably the best NBA comp that I can give for him. Is just a guy who is in the right spots at the right times, knows where to be off the ball on offense, which I think is really important, especially for you know, being shot ready and being able to spot up and make shots and make shots from behind the 3-point line. And then on defense too, just, you know, again, in the right spots at the right time, just a really smart, high IQ player.
Yeah, I was struggling for a while trying to think of like who would be a good comp for him, and Trevor Ariza didn't even cross my mind, but that's pretty good. The guy I came up with is a lot younger than Ariza, and I thought he kind of reminded me of Mikal Bridges from Phoenix, where he's like a solid defender, a good shooter, and I think, I don't know if their bodies really match up, I didn't get that deep into it, but just watching him play, Mikal Bridges was a guy that I thought kind of, you know, Mikal Bridges and Vassell, they know their role. They don't really do anything that they can't do. They don't try and be someone they're not. And I think that's important when you're thinking of getting a role player in a draft that can be high value. And I think Vassell's a guy that has that.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too, the great point there about the Mikal Bridges comp too, is that they're both guys that just really know how to play within the flow of the offense. And guys that you can plug in and play and will get production from right away, because they weren't guys that, you know, were super heavily relied upon in college. You know, I guess you can make that argument a little bit more for Bridges than you could for Vassell, but but I think that just creates a smoother transition to the NBA and allows them to be more impactful early on. And if you get a guy who, you know, essentially since he's finished high school has just been a really, really solid role player that does what a coach asks him to do. And like you said, doesn't try and do too much, takes good shots, the right shots, doesn't force it on offense. And, you know, isn't above playing really solid, great on ball and or off ball defense. I think that those types of guys are guys that you want to target versus, you know, if you're looking for immediate production. And I think that's kind of what the Timberwolves are looking for in a sense, which I think makes it a little tougher for a guy like Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball, just because they've been the guy wherever they've been. And then having to make that transition into a role player right away in the first year can kind of create a little bit more of a project, if you will. So I love the prospect of Vassell being able to jump in and contribute well from day one.
Yeah, and I think that the big thing with Vassell is I think he has a pretty high floor. Like, I think no matter how, you know, how good he ends up being, I think his floor is high enough to where he's going to be an impactful 3-and-D player throughout his time in the NBA. And for those of you that are listening, you want to hear some stats. He averaged 12.7 points, 5 rebounds, and 1.6 assists in college as a sophomore. His freshman year was downbeat a little bit than that, but his shooting is the thing we mentioned the most, and he shot over 41% in both seasons at Florida State. So I think it's just he's shown that he's very consistent from three, and he's not like the threes he takes are more of catch and shoot or like spot up. He's not a guy that's going to take you off the dribble, pull up in front of you, or anything like that. He really needs to set his feet well. So I think it limits him some, but he's never claimed to be a creator. He doesn't even take those off the dribble threes. Like, I think he took one off the dribble three his entire freshman year. Like, one. That was it. So he really knows what kind of shots he can make and which kind he can't, and he uses that to his advantage.
Yeah, and I think the other piece there that you mentioned, too, is that the off the dribble piece. I think that he improved a lot, especially inside the arc as an off-dribble shooter. Like I mentioned earlier, with kind of post fadeaways and fadeaways, especially going to his left. Didn't shoot a ton of floaters, but really liked that fade kind of once he gets 2 feet in the paint and fades away, kind of like what Kawhi loves to do. Obviously not at the same level.
And he has
level.
The length to do it, too. But right. Like he's getting the ball high enough to get over everyone.
But right, he's got the length to do it, and he's also got, like Kawhi, he's got the high release point that you need in order to be able to pull that off consistently. And you know, if he can get to his spot and elevate and have a shot that's above his head and he can keep it away from defenders, that's something that'll definitely translate to the next level. So I'm excited to see kind of how that comes to fruition. But like you were saying, much more of a spot-up shooter, and more stats, I guess, if people are looking for more context. On spot-ups, he's in the 80th percentile nationwide in the NCAA. And coming off screens, he didn't do it quite as much, a little bit of a smaller sample size there. Just because, you know, when you're talking about coming off screens, he really only did that on, you know, a very limited amount of possessions, but still 95th percentile, 1.4 points per possession, which is awesome, which is a crazy high number. And then when you're looking at catch and shoot jumpers, 87th percentile, shot 39% on guarded catch and shoot opportunities, and then shot 44.2 on unguarded. So just a guy that converts open jump shots, catch and shoot opportunities at a really high clip.
Yeah, I think all those stats that you just mentioned, his percentiles for all of them, really lend me to believe that he's going to be a solid shooter in the NBA, even if he's not a top level shooter, which I think he probably will turn into that. I think he's still, you know, like a 38% 3-point shooter at worst in the NBA, which I think is, that's something for sure. But the one thing about him, how do you feel about his jump shot? It's a little off to me, but it's consistent. It's the same every time. I don't know if you paid as much attention to it as I did, because I heard, so I was listening to Dane Moore and Will DeBerg talk about it, and they were talking about how his jump shot was a little off. And I was like, okay, I have to watch this. And I think they were right, but it is consistent enough. Or not even enough. It's very consistent to the point where I'm not that worried about it, because he shoots it the same every single time and he shoots it well. So it's not something that's one time it's way off from another time. Like it looks consistent. I think that's important.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't necessarily something that I was looking for. I mean, when you see his jump shot, you can kind of tell that, you know, it's not your standard perfect, very clean, smooth jump shot.
It doesn't
shot.
Look like Tyrell Terry's jump shot.
Right. But you know, the thing is that, like you were saying, it looks consistent. It wasn't, so that's something that I think that, at least I'd like to think I would notice and see, just from watching a few games and watching highlights as well. But his jumper looks rather fluid in the sense that it doesn't look like he's uncomfortable shooting the ball. I think you have other guys, for instance, like Patrick Williams.
Derek Culver.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That look a little bit more uncomfortable when they're shooting. Yeah. But Vassell doesn't hesitate, has a lot of confidence in his jump shot. And like I said, it's a rather fluid jumper with a pretty stable base that, you know, isn't crazy. It's not like his legs are flying around everywhere. And so, like, I'm right there with you. I completely buy his jump shot in the sense that I think it'll translate really well. And then you also just factor in that he'll have a ton more hours in the gym to be able to devote to just shooting and getting that down and working with development coaches. There might be a small tweak here or there, but I really don't think that there's going to be any drastic changes to his jump shot at the next level.
No, I don't think so.
And especially with a short off season too, I don't think going into his rookie season that teams are really going to want to tinker with that much.
No. And I think part of it's with, you know, he's got really long arms, and I think sometimes that just looks off for a guy of, you know, he's only 6'6", but with arms being 6'10", I mean, it's like it's not like it's Michael Kidd Gilchrist shot where it's like his elbows all the way into his chest, and like, it's weird. It's just, it's a little not perfect, but I think it's good enough. But you said it best, like, he's going to have more time at the NBA level. I think, like, even I forget that these college players aren't just in the gym all day. I mean, they have to go to class. They got to do their homework or like some of them might not, but they go to class and they have structured time to be in the gym. It's not like NBA players don't have a job outside of that. Maybe they have kids to take care of and stuff, but they have a lot more time in the gym and a lot better development guys that can help them out.
Right. And the other thing I think is true too with Vassell is that, you know, you don't have to fix his shot selection. And I think that's another thing too, is it's really just about getting in the gym, taking shots, make sure you're replicating, you know, game level speed and game type actions too. And I'm fully confident that he'll be good. I think his footwork, especially when he's coming around screens to receive passes, is good. I just think that like you were saying too, when he has really long arms and holds the ball high above his head, I think your first instinct is to kind of think that it looks unnatural.
Yeah.
With the exception of maybe like a Kevin Durant, just because he's mm-hmm. one of the best shooters.
But Kevin Durant's also like 7 feet tall, so
right.
I think his arms fit him a little more.
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean with the arms kind of look like they don't fit, which I think I see that more on the defensive end than the offensive end, but
mm-hmm.
But
with his arms spread out wide like an eagle, he just looks so lanky. Like,
right.
It's crazy.
And covers so much space.
Yeah, which is a good thing. Defensively, that's something you want.
Right.
You know, that's not a knock at all.
Oh, no. I just think that kind of vanity of it in terms of it looking off, I think is definitely something that stands out a little bit once someone kind of tells you about it or once you see it a couple of times.
So I mentioned he only averaged about an assist and a half at college in his sophomore season. How do you feel about that? Does it worry you playing like as like a two guard or maybe like a three? Do you think he should distribute the ball a little bit better? Granted, he does have the lowest turnover percentage in all of the ACC at just 6.6%. So that's good. So it's like he's only passing when he knows he can make the pass.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's better than Williams in comparison. So I think Patrick
right.
Williams had almost double the amount of turnovers that he had assists at Florida State this season. I don't worry about it quite as much because he's not really an off-the-ball creator. If he was a guy that was an off-the-ball creator archetype that really wanted to or really had a strong tendency to put the ball on the floor and put his head down and go to the rim and try and make plays, I would be concerned about it. But because he doesn't, and his assists and his passing is a little more opportunistic in the sense that, you know, he really takes what the defense gives him. If he sees space in front of him or a lane in front of him, he's going to take it. And he's not afraid to throw a lob over a dropping defender that steps up in the paint. And he did that pretty regularly in college just because Florida State has had so many really long, lengthy, big guys that threw
on
down.
On defense, they switched like 1 through 5. Like,
which was
everything
awesome.
Was getting switched, and it worked so well for them.
Yeah.
Because they just had those lengthy, strong, fast guys.
Yeah, if they could have just had more shooters or a little more, you know, offensive creativity and playmaking, I think that team would have been really tough to handle when a game slows down in March and April. But it's not really a huge problem for me, just in the sense that he generally makes the right read and the right play when he has the ball in his hands. I'd be really curious to see too how many hockey assists he has, just because I think
some
that
PTAs and everything.
Yeah, I think that he a lot of times he'll collapse a defense when he does put the ball on the deck and get into the lane, and then he'll either elevate or he'll elevate to shoot or he'll elevate and then shoot out of a pass. Maybe to the corner of the wing that then gets kicked one more time for an assist. Saw that a decent amount as well. So no. And especially because he takes care of the ball so very well, like you said, it's not a chief concern for me.
For sure. And he's so smart with it that it really doesn't matter. But
did you kind of see the same thing or did you think it was more
no, I'm not worried. I don't really worry about it. I mean, especially when you look and you have a team. If you're talking about him on the Timberwolves, when you have Kat and D'Lo, who are both really good passers for their position, like D'Lo's one of the best passers, not like top three maybe, but one of the better passers in the league. And Kat's one of the best passing centers. and you run the offense through them, I think Vassell can fit well in like a Robert Covington role or whatever on the offense. So I'm not worried about it at all. But defense is where he intrigues me the most, and I think he's the most valuable for the Timberwolves. So I want to point out a couple weaknesses of his game defensively, though. One is how small he is, weight-wise. He's less frame than 200 wise, pounds. Yeah. Yeah, frame. You know, he's skinny like Kevin Durant. Not saying you can't be a good defender when you're skinny, but I think he would struggle to guard anything bigger than a three. Even some threes in the league, he would struggle to guard because he's not quite as strong as he needs to be. Like, if you put Josh Okogie's muscle onto Devin Vassell, he would be insane defensively. But I think he just needs to put on weight, and there's still room to do that. He's only 20 years old, and he can still put on weight and everything. But that's one thing. And then I see that he gambles a little bit defensively with some steals. Not too bad, but there are times where he's trying to jump a lane and it's not there, and then he leaves a wide open cut or something. But those are really the only knocks I have him on defense.
Yeah, I definitely noticed the aggression, and I think part of it is because he feels so confident in his teammates' team defensive abilities that, yep, that I think he knows that if he gambles, there's three other guys that are 6'8 or 6'9 with 7-foot wingspans that can step in and rotate, and he, yep, can recover, and their communication is really, really good defensively. That's something that I've noticed with Lettern Hamilton's teams over the years. And even when like a guy like Jonathan Isaac was there, he just has a really good knack for finding these outstanding team defenders and kind of grooming them, like you said. And yeah, I think going back to what you said about J.O. too, like the big difference between J.O. and Jared Culver is that, you know, Jared Culver's probably got 2-3 inches on Josh Okogie, but Josh Okogie plays bigger because he's built like a brick house.
Yeah.
And he's hard to move. And I think that's a completely valid kind of concern. And you know, again, too, it kind of goes back to the whole NBA strength program. It'll be really interesting to see what happens with him, to see if he can put on, you know, 10-15 pounds in the first season that he's in the NBA. But we'll see, you know, and kind of going back to my comparison about Trevor Ariza. So Trevor Ariza is like 225 right now.
But coming into the league, he was probably quite a bit smaller.
Exactly. And I think you're just a huge beneficiary of getting into the NBA and having, you know, strength personal and chefs and everything and the whole nine. So,
yeah, I think he needs that weight defensively a little bit. What position do you see him at in the NBA? Do you see him as a two or more of a three?
I see him as a three. Because he doesn't really have that explosive burst off the dribble that allows him to get to the rim, and that, you know, he just doesn't really flash as a playmaker off the ball, or excuse me, off the bounce, and isn't a high level passer, I think he would struggle to make it as a two, and he's just not quick enough. But I see him more as a three. As a three that could play a small ball four if he is next to a really strong prototypical five.
And that's what I was thinking too. He would need to put on a little more muscle to play that four, especially offensively. But I think he can get there. I think he could find his way to play some small ball four for us. But I find him more as I think he's a three for sure is where I would put him at the next level.
Yeah, and going back to Ariza, he was 6'8", 200 coming out of UCLA.
He's taller though too. So taller, he adds a few more pounds and stuff. So they were probably essentially around the same size.
Right. So hopefully he kind of sees that same progression.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I like Vassell's fit defensively too. I think he's smart at jumping passing lanes. He's pretty good on ball. Just a little more strength will help him on ball even more. Another thing is he does lack some athleticism. He's not the most athletic guy on the court. He's pretty smooth in transition athletically, but he's not going to jump out of the gym or anything like Patrick Williams, who we'll talk about in a bit. But do you think that matters, really? Or,
you know, I think it does. But when you take a look at him, you know, at the college level, he was really, really good as an isolation defender. He allowed, you know, less than 0.4 points per possession in isolation, which is really, really strong. He was in the 91st mm-hmm. percentile there in the entire college basketball scene. So I'm not super worried about that. I think that, again, if he has to slide down and guard a two or switch on to a true guard, he might struggle laterally with them, but especially, again, he has a 6'10", 6'11 wingspan, which I think, and he knows how to use it too, which I think will help him laterally.
I think his lateral quickness, for as unathletic, air quotes unathletic, as he is, I think he's still pretty quick laterally. Like, I don't think it's as bad as you would have thought if you just watched him as
an athlete. I agree. It's more north-south kind of top-end speed and acceleration that he doesn't have.
Yeah.
But I agree
with you. When he does get beat by these smaller guards that are quicker, he's really... I was just watching some film like an hour ago, and he just turns his hips really well and uses like that cross step to just recover and get back in front of whoever's there. Part of it, he uses his length to do it too, but yeah, if he gets beat off the dribble, he's not just gone. You know, like D'Angelo Russell's beat off the dribble, kiss it goodbye, he's out of the play. Devin Vassell can get back into the play, and I think that's important too when you're talking about on-ball defense.
Yeah, something that I've noticed too, and I've kind of seen it a little bit too with Jeremy Grant, just because I've watched a good amount of Jeremy Grant film mm-hmm. in the last week or so, was that Jeremy Grant, a lot of times, I was watching a play where Lonzo Ball had the ball on the perimeter and Jeremy Grant was guarding him. Lonzo takes a small dribble to his left and then kind of uses a power crossover to get to his right side and then just explodes going to the mm-hmm. rim. And what happened is Grant, got his hips turned. Lonzo successfully turned his hips, but then Grant just kind of turned his hips further to the basket and then just kind of went on a straight line beeline down the lane.
Basically just like 360?
To try and cut him off. Just mm-hmm. a 180 turn to try and cut him off. To try and cut him off, and then gets to the block and uses his chest to get into the body of Lonzo. Yep. Which then allows him to kind of regain that prime positioning. And I saw the same thing with Vassell too. And I think it's something that bigger kind of wings like to try and do is they drop that hip even further and then try and cut guys off further down the baseline and get into them with their body to kind of reassert control of the drive. I'd like to see him be able to do that at the NBA level, but who knows? Yeah. Smaller, compact, well-built point guards might have a better time kind of getting into his chest and drawing fouls or finishing through contact.
The only problem I see with turning like that 180-degree turn is then you're banking on them going to the rim. Where if he take, like, you know, if Lonzo, not that he's a great shooter, but if he takes, one back dribble and steps back, then you're kind of out of the play. So correct. That's the rough part with doing that. But if you know, like, Lonzo's not a great shooter, so if he thinks he got you, he's going to the rim. He's not going to stop and pull up. So it's more of who you're playing. And I think, actually, Devin Vassell's very smart, and I think he picks up on tendencies really quickly on who he's guarding. So I think that's important. But I think the big thing and why I like him so much is I think he raises the floor of the Timberwolves team defensively quite a bit. I think just having him, I think it raises our floor quite a bit. Kind of how, like, having Robert Covington raised our floor some, too. I think the same thing with Vassell.
Yeah, and I think especially, too, when you have defenders out there like Malik Beasley and D'Angelo Russell who are markedly, not as good of a defender as Vassell.
But I do have faith in I have faith in Beasley to improve.
So do I. I guess my main point is I don't think NBA teams are going to try and single out Devin Vassell on defense and try and explicitly attack him. Which because of that, I think that kind of masks some of the issues that he has in terms of his frame and his kind of lack of elite lateral quickness, because he'll spend most of his time playing off the ball, which I think is where he's most comfortable as a defender. Kind of same goes for Patrick Williams as well, and allows him to make the greatest impact. And so if he can really work on refining some of his off-ball tendencies to be a little hyper-aggressive, I think that he'll be really, really solid from day one while he's working on that frame and improving just, I don't know, some of the frame issues that kind of produce some of the shortcomings on the ball as a defender.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not too worried about Vassell, but I think his fit on the Wolves, I think he would be a good player. In the lottery, wherever the Wolves pick falls, what's the highest you'd be willing to draft Vassell to the Timberwolves? Because he won't be there with the Brooklyn pick. He should be gone by then.
I would pick Vassell with the Timberwolves pick.
I'm thinking like.
I'd say number
fifth,
one.
Fifth? Really? I think fourth or fifth.
I'd say number one solely for the fact that I don't think that the Timberwolves are going to trade back, because I don't know who's going to come calling for the number one pick. And right. I don't think it should be a situation where the Timberwolves draft a guy higher or kind of get cold feet about drafting a guy higher because that's not where everybody has him.
Which is a good approach, I think. It's more about, I think sometimes people worry too much about how others value a player.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah,
rather than how you value them as your organization.
Right, and it kind of goes back to like the Wesley Johnson, Paul George example. Like the entire Timberwolves front office wanted to draft Paul George, but because Wesley Johnson was ranked ahead of Paul George,
was it David Kahn?
Yeah, Kahn got cold feet about drafting Paul George, and that's kind of the thing here. Is like, all right, well, if you have the second or third pick, let's say you have like the third pick or something, and you don't
I think I'd be comfortable at three, probably.
I would too. I personally like Vassell in terms of his fit on the Timberwolves better than Anthony Edwards and better than LaMelo Ball. And when you're looking at guys in the draft, you're not looking at, all right, who's just the best overall player. I think you have to look at, all right.
Unless you have a lot of holes.
Right, I mean, and I don't think
that we have cornerstone pieces that we're trying to build with, so I think.
Right, like we're not trying to shoot the moon in the draft. We're trying to get a guy who, you know, can really add value to the team in the sense that he fills a role at a really high level as opposed to trying to draft a franchise cornerstone. And I think that Vassell is kind of that perfect complementary role player piece in the top, 10 picks of this draft. It's him and Onyeka Okongwu. I think those are the two guys that I would probably put at the top of my Timberwolves board in terms of guys the Wolves should be looking at. So I would feel confident drafting him first overall just because, I think he's the guy that probably fits the best. And I would be a little apprehensive to just saying, oh, we should go get Anthony Edwards because,
everybody has him.
Right. And it's like Anthony Edwards and Malik Beasley are pretty similar.
Pretty much. They're very
similar. Like, I think Anthony Edwards has a higher defensive ceiling and probably offensive ceiling too, but they're a really similar archetype of player. And I think it would be harder for Anthony Edwards to step in and have success on a team that already has D'Lo, Malik Beasley, and Kat.
And Okogie.
Correct.
Plus, then you have Okogie playing that position. Culver's a 2/3, so it's kind of crowded.
Right. I don't think they want a two in that first with that first pick. I'm still not sold that we'll use that first pick to draft somebody. But I would feel comfortable taking him number one overall.
Okay. Yeah, I feel you kind of sold me on it. I think I could get myself to be okay with it. I really like him. He's probably one of my favorite prospects in this draft, but I think he would number one. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, unless you're drafting, Edwards or Ball to try and use in a trade later on, which I would understand that.
Yeah. But. Yeah. But then at the same point, just trade the pick right away.
Exactly.
Yep. But okay, so I think that's enough Devin Vassell talk. So I want to bring this up quick before we get into Patrick Williams. I'm not going to quiz you this time because I don't want you to have to embarrass yourself again. So my article today, you read it, and I just wanted to know what you thought about it. So basically what I was saying was NBA teams too often labeled, like especially this class, as weak because we're always looking for the next big thing. We're looking for LeBron or Jordan or Zion, and we forget that like championship teams are filled with solid talent top to bottom. And the Timberwolves already have their stars with Russell and Towns. Whether you think that that's a good enough core to win a championship or not, it's up to interpretation. But what I'm saying is if you look at this draft class through a lens of you are going to build with these prospects instead of around these prospects, this draft looks a lot better than if you have it the other way around.
I completely agree with that. And yeah, I read the piece and I loved it solely for the fact that, you know, Vassell and Okongwu, no matter which way you want to rank them, those two are my favorite guys for the Wolves. And I think that one of the two will be around when they pick, even if they pick at seven. Yep. I think that one of those two guys will probably be around.
Yeah.
And you know, I think there's other good guys too, like Isaac Okoro is a guy that you could build with because, you know, he's got really high level skills in terms of driving to the rim. He's just a defensive pit bull. He's like a mix of Josh Okogie and Marcus Smart on defense. So like guys like that, I completely agree with the point that you're making. And think that those two guys are really high level fits, just because you can plug them in and play because their skills are going to translate on day one. Because, you know, they're high level defensive players that really excel off the ball on defense. And those are things that, you know, I really don't see players struggling to play off ball defense in the NBA in their first season when they were so dominant at it at the college level.
Yeah.
So I personally liked it, personally agree with it, and think that it's a really good draft to highlight the skills and kind of the what the front office was built upon is just scouting and finding guys like this.
I think it's pretty deep for like role players. Like you don't have top end talent
100%,
and there's not a ton of people that even have that star potential, but there's a lot of players that are going to fill a specific role that I think is really important. So I think, you know, if every draft, I said this in there too, but if every draft was like this draft, yeah, it would get kind of rough. But having one every 5 years, not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I think it separates the haves from the have-nots in terms of really strong scouting departments. And I think that the Timberwolves have that, both domestically and internationally. A lot of, you know, there's a lot of G League influence and just high-level scouting influence in the Timberwolves front office. And I think that they'll really lean on that to find guys that have kind of different skills and traits that you're looking for, and and not really caring about where they are on boards, just because I think everybody is all over the place. And, you know, one man's trash might be another man's treasure. And it's just really about finding guys that fit for your basketball team rather than are seen with the most skills or this or that. So yeah, I completely agree.
All right. So now let's get into Patrick Williams. And I have a question for you first off, right off the bat. What position does this guy play? What position do you see him playing at the next level? Because the reason I ask, so I'll go through this. Tankathon has him as a power forward, right? Yep. ESPN has him as a small forward. They used to have him as a shooting guard. A real GM has him as a shooting guard. Nobody has him as a center. What position do you think he plays at the next level?
I think it's really going to depend on who drafts him, because I don't think that Patrick Williams is going to be a guy that's drafted in the lottery because his shooting is really kind of awkward. I would have really liked to see him play in Houston as a small ball five, because I think that his frame and the way he plays defense and attacks the defensive glass and just has such a strong nose for the ball and is so energetic that would really fit the bill for a small ball five in terms of maybe what Houston's looking for. But I think he's going to be a four because
so let's say Timberwolves. Of his frame. Do you think he's a four on the Timberwolves?
Correct, because of his frame.
Okay.
Just because he's built,
absolutely
he's
no
built
way
like a brick
he's
house.
A shooting guard.
Oh no,
no
God,
way
no.
he's a shooting
no, no,
guard.
No, no.
And I don't think there's a way he's a small forward unless he starts shooting the lights out. I think he's a four or a five, and I mean maybe a combination of both. I mean, if the Timberwolves had him, I could see him running next to Cat as a four, which I don't think would be necessarily bad. And I could also see him running some, you know, small ball five on teams, and I think it would turn out pretty good. I mean, he's like you said, he's built like a brick house. He's 6'8". He's got good length. He's 6'11". I don't know how much he weighs, but he's a big 225. Dude. And he's super 225, and he's super athletic.
Yeah, and just an explosive leaper, explosive athlete, no matter how you cut it.
Such a high motor, like kind of a Kogi-esque, but in a bigger body, but just that nonstop, like, go at your throat type of player.
Right.
And he's a solid defender. So yeah, I think it's interesting to me. So for some Minnesota fans that want a comparison, I couldn't really think of a great NBA comparison. I thought of like Jordan Bell, but I was like, Williams can shoot a little bit better than Bell. He's a little stronger than Bell, but he's athletic like Bell and, you know, whatever. But my comp, and I don't know if you're going to agree with this, is kind of, I thought of Jarvis Omersa on the Gophers. And I was thinking, like, the kid is just super athletic and he has a high motor. Like, those are the two things. That's my comparison. It's not much outside of that, but just like that athletic dude that can just jump out of the gym and he never stops.
Yeah, I kind of like the JTO comparison. Yeah, I think he's obviously he's a little more built than Jarvis is, but I think that's a good comparison. A guy who just kind of comes in as an energizer.
Right.
And some games will kind of come out flat and won't really, the energy won't really translate into production, but you can feel him when he's on the floor one way or the other. And that's also definitely the case with a guy like Josh. That's why I love him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that he is a kind of a tough guy to nail down a comp to. I didn't really have a perfect one in mind, but I think Jordan Bell, I think that's a great one. I think he's got a little more meat to him than Jordan Bell does, which I think will allow him to guard fives as well. And he's a little more stiff and doesn't really move as well laterally. And I think that will allow him to guard fives more, just because, you know, there aren't a whole lot of fives that are going to jab and go and try and blow by you. And I said it in my piece that came out this morning, or came out on Wednesday morning, that I worry that the Timberwolves are looking or are too focused on trying to find a four that can switch down, as opposed that can, you know, switch down and switch up. Because you look at Wancho, like Wancho got killed down on the block, and when he had to switch on to guys that are bigger than him, and especially if you've got a guy like Naz Reid who's foul prone, or Cat even who's foul prone they're probably going to try and switch fives onto you, and if you can't guard a five, or you're trying to find a four that a four of the future and they can't guard a five, I think you're going to run into a lot more issues. And Patrick Williams is the type of guy that I think will be able to guard fives. I think that just some of his positioning and pliability can be improved upon, but again,
and
I
his
think
body si- he has the body size to do it.
Correct,
maybe not the height.
Correct, and I think
but
that
if PJ Tucker can do it, Patrick Williams
100%
is taller than Tucker
100%. And I think that again, once you get into the NBA strength and conditioning programs, I think that guys can get quicker, they can get more pliable and more flexible, which I think allows them to be better defenders, and is something that I definitely think will happen with Patrick Williams.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think he could guard fives. So I want to talk about his shooting a little bit, because it does look awkward, like you said, but the percentage isn't absolutely terrible, like 32% on limited attempts per game. But it lends me to think, like, maybe something's there. And then you look at his free throw percentage, which was actually almost 84%, which is kind of telling for prospects coming into the NBA. There's been, like, studies done on that. So maybe he has maybe there's a window for him improving. He's one of the youngest players, I think, in the draft. He's like, what is he, 19 years old? He's 18 years old. He won't turn 19 till August. So I think he should be pretty, he might have a chance. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think he might have a chance to improve a jump shot to where it's at least you have to guard him. Like Jordan Bell, he made that 1-3, I think, in the corner of a Wolves game at the beginning
did
of this
he,
year.
Did
but
he,
other than that,
there was another one. Didn't he bank it in?
Like
or was it might have been a preseason game.
Yeah, but I think Williams will be better than that. I think he could be good enough to where you would have to pay attention to him from deep. Maybe not right away, but in a few years.
Yeah, I think when you kind of look at his jump shot, it kind of looks like... for some reason, big guys just look like they totally baby their jump shots sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what it looks like a little bit. It just looks like he's uncomfortable when he shoots. And I think that was also something that I noticed with Kawhi Leonard when he was coming out. And he obviously was able to fix it. And again, very similar body type and also very similar skill set coming out. Kawhi's probably a little bit better on the ball, but I think that being able to develop a jump shot is something that takes time, but is something that can be done. And especially if you have good touch on free throws and floaters and little runners around the rim, like Williams does, I think that probably lends to more of a conducive situation for success in terms of developing and growing a jump shot. So I hope we see it, just because he's a really unique prospect in terms of his off the ball prowess and how much he loves just going up and trying to attack and kill people at the rim when he's on defense, which is just a ton of fun to watch. And I'd really love for him to have a jump shot, because he's so much fun to watch. And developing more of an offensive game for him would I think he could become an all-star level player if he develops a little bit more of a jumper and an offensive game.
Yeah, I think his defense is good enough to get to that level, and I think, just a jump shot. But right now, without a jump shot, a role I've seen him play in a lot of offenses would kind of be in that dunker spot.
Yep.
Or as a pick and roll, lob threat, because he is very athletic. He's going to go up and get the ball. So with D'Lo in a pick and roll, maybe that, maybe if D'Lo floats one up to him, it wouldn't actually be too bad. But I think he has a little ways to go with his jumper. But I mean, a lot of people do fix their jump shots. You got people that never shot before all of a sudden taking threes and making them, and so I would never count him out from having.
No, it's definitely workable, and he's got a solid base too, which I think helps, and it's pretty consistent. And like I said, when you have a consistent base and your legs aren't flying around everywhere, I think the upper body is a lot easier to fix than a whole body shot, if you will. Yeah. And I think his thing is much more of an upper body thing. I think sometimes his toes, he kind of gets the pizza feet a little bit, where, his feet are kind of point in, but, but, I think that's something that can be fixed, especially with just getting in the gym and having
and
reps.
There's not, a weird, hitch in his
Correct.
Shot.
Correct. It's pretty smooth.
Because you think of some players that have, I don't know, when they get to a certain point of their jump shot, it just kind of, there's, a hitch there. Even Culver's kind of like that at one point in his jump shot. But I don't see that in Williams. I think it's more of just, arm mechanics. And I think
makes
that
it
could
look
be worked
kinda
out
wonky.
Of him, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, too, it helps, like you're saying. And I think when it's smooth, but it just looks weird, that's easier to fix than, something
when
that
choppy
is more confident of a stroke, but is a lot choppier, like Culver, I guess.
Yeah, because so. Culver's not afraid to shoot it, but he maybe should be.
Right.
But another point of his offense that I noticed is he's actually a really solid cutter.
Yep.
And he's good at, you mentioned he's good at finishing around the rim. He has good touch. And I think in an offense like the Timberwolves, where it's, very spacey, very five-out-esque, a good cutter is really good. How many times did we see Juancho Hernan Gomez cut down the baseline? Or even Robert Covington, before he got traded, just find a lane and cut to the basket, and all of a sudden he's found. All the time. So if you have a good cutter who's strong and can finish at the rim even better, Juancho didn't finish at the rim better. So you give those possessions to a guy like Patrick Williams, who's got the touch around the rim, and he's just a lot stronger and more athletic than Juancho. I think it would be pretty interesting to see him in that type of role in the offense as well.
Yeah.
He has some 3-and-D potential too with a jump shot, but we won't get too deep into that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Williams, the reason why I think his offense probably isn't as far off as a lot of people might think is because he's smart when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. And I think if you're smart when you don't have the ball in your hands and you kind of know where to be and know where to flow and kind of flow to open space, whether it be under the basket or in the corners, just being able to effectively maintain the spacing of the offense, even if you don't have the ball in your hands, is really important. And he knows how to do that and also played with other bigs on the floor, especially when they'd run different horns actions or when, you know, a big guy would flash in the high post and collect an entry pass in the high post, he would oftentimes have no problem cutting backdoor and be wide open. And he also cut backdoor too when the ball was on the opposite wing and he was in the opposite corner, which was cool to see and encouraging to see, because he's taken advantage of the athleticism that he has. And also, like you mentioned before, really, really good at going up and catching lobs and throwing down alley-oops as well. So I think that would be something that would fit in well in Minnesota, just because you can never have too many guys who are really smart cutters. And that's definitely his best offensive skill, is his ability to cut and catch the ball off a cut, which is also important. Yeah. And then, like you said, finish at the rim, at least markedly better than what Wanjo is able to do. And he's not, he's not afraid of contact either, which is important. And when you're 6'8", 225, you better not be afraid of contact.
Right. Yeah. And I think that cutting, like I said earlier, cutting on a team where the ball the rest of your team is spaced out is super important. Another thing about his offensive game that I kind of think is a weakness is his playmaking. But again, we talked about this before. He doesn't need to be a playmaker, but he needs to take care of the ball. And he doesn't do that very well. I think you said he has like twice as many turnovers as assists, which is kind of discouraging. But, you know, if he's not handling the ball much, maybe it's not as big of a deal, but it still is worth noting that he doesn't take care of the ball very well.
Yeah, he's got 50 turnovers and 29 assists, and I think a lot of that doesn't necessarily have to do with passing. I think it more has to do with his body control. He had a decent number of offensive fouls and travels as well, which I think can be a little bit
that comes
more...
with that comes with a guy with the high motor like that, and you got,
and that's only 18,
teach that out of them,
right? Yeah. And J.O. had problems with that and kind of still has problems with that, but I think as you get more adjusted to the speed of the NBA game, that kind of goes away a little bit. And Florida State likes to play a fast up and down game, so I think him being able to play in that, I think, helped. And it's good to make the mistakes in college rather than just continually making those mistakes or finding out that you have that problem in the pros. And I don't necessarily know how much of it is his passing versus his body control, but I definitely think that body control is more of an issue than it is for a lot of other prospects that struggle with turnovers. And I think that's something that is a lot more correctable to me than a guy who just makes bad reads and often is just careless with the ball and throws it away. So that'll be kind of something that'll be interesting to monitor. But, you know, Florida State did also run him or have him run pick and rolls a decent amount. He ran 26 possessions. He ran a pick and roll as a ball handler, and actually came in the 90th percentile with a points per possession, damn near close to one, which is really, really good for a guy his size that plays his position. So, and he did turn it over 20% of the time in those sets, but, you know, I think his passing, especially when he's got his head up and he's going down towards the rim, is good and something that I think will translate.
Okay, so we've talked about these two for quite a bit. Do you have anything else to add? Otherwise, I want to talk about just Florida State in general, because it seems like they've produced some good talent over the last number of years. They seem like they have a good coaching staff, because we have Malik Beasley. He's a Florida State guy. Now you have Williams. You have Vassell, who are coming out. Jonathan Isaac is a quality NBA player. I mean, probably like a most improved candidate if he stays healthy. So I think, like, maybe we should trust what they're doing there, and taking at least one of these two in this draft wouldn't be a bad choice.
Yeah, no, I think that they produce a lot of really smart players that just make the right play and aren't afraid to really D up and play really solid defense off the ball, especially. And just a lot of kind of game wreckers and destructors too, when you look at, you know, Dwayne Bacon and Jonathan Isaac and Terrence Mann, all guys with really, really long, lanky frames. Malik Beasley is probably the smallest out of all those guys that has been drafted. But yeah, it's really, really impressive to see them continually churn out these great players, and credit to them for recruiting guys with skill sets that they can work with, that they know that they'll be able to mold the right way and really turn into NBA prospects.
seems like they're all just high motor guys. I mean, we talked about Vassell and Williams both being high motor, but then Malik Beasley is like, he's go, go, go. He's one of the hardest workers. I mean, when we first got him, you'd go on the Timberwolves Twitter page and it was just all Malik Beasley in the gym. That's what was the pictures, was just Malik Beasley going in the gym, working hard. And I think that, if you draft either of these two players, you just know how hard of a worker they're going to be and how much they want it. So I think that's good too, because when Jarrett Culver came out of the draft even last year, all you heard was, he's the hardest working kid I've ever met. And you still hear, Jarrett's the first one in the gym, the last one to leave. So I think having hardworking people is important too. So having those two, having either one of those two in this draft would be good. So hypothetically, say the Timberwolves draft Vassell at, let's say we get 5 and he's there at 5. We take Vassell at 5 and Patrick Williams at 16 with the Brooklyn pick. What grade do you give that draft for the Timberwolves? Do you think there are two people we should take, both of them in the same draft, or just like one of them and then somebody else?
I would give that draft probably probably like B-. And the reason why I would, and I guess I'm cheating a little bit here, is probably because that would mean that we failed to go out and acquire somebody with one of those two first round picks.
No, I think that's fair though. I mean, I think when you talk about draft, you also talk about picks are assets for trades too, so you can a trade can turn into part of your draft grade as
right,
well.
Right, 100%. And we've seen Rosas continually refer to the picks as not picks, but draft assets. And I think that
draft capital.
Yeah, and exactly. I think that kind of is pretty telling in terms of what his intentions are. I definitely think that the Wolves will make one of those two picks. They have to, at least because of the stipend rule. But so we know that they're going to take and keep one of those picks. But I think that it'll probably be the first one, just because I really don't know who they're going to try and go after with a top pick. I think that I think that the type of guy they may want to go after with that first pick probably is going to be worth a little too much. And so they'll end up settling for getting some guy with the second pick that they'll have. I mean, hopefully they even get it with Brooklyn.
Yeah.
In the playoffs, if we get there. But yeah, I think that you know, if we took two players, that something probably went wrong somewhere in the war room on the phone. So,
I think that the only way we take two picks is if Rosas can't find a deal, and but I also don't think Rosas is just going to make a deal to make a deal. I think he's smart enough to not make a bad deal. I think whatever deal, I'm super confident in him, so whatever he did, I would be like, there's a reason for that, and I trust him. You know, I've never had that before. We didn't have that with Thibodeau or Khan or anybody else that's been running the team, but with Rosas here, I feel confident that every move made has a reason. You know, and
yeah,
I think even with Jarrett Culver, the people are down in the Culver pick, but you know, there's still time. Everything, we're not going to get deep into that, but I think there was a reason he drafted him there.
Yeah, look at the last 15 games of the season that the Wolves played. He was awesome. He was awesome, awesome, awesome. But yeah, I'd like to hope that they're not going to make a trade just to make a trade. I think that's part of the reason why Sachin Gupta is the EVP of basketball ops as well, just because I think that, you know, he really, really gets and understands player value and trades and knowing what's a good deal and what's not a deal. And I think that trades like trading Gorgui Dieng for James Johnson are kind of born out of that line of thinking. And kind of thinking about how can you stretch your dollar or your asset the furthest. So I'm sure that they'll do that. And if they think that the best way to stretch that is by drafting a player, I think that that's what they're going to do. And if you wanted to have me grade those two picks on strictly if they were forced to keep both picks, what would I get? I'd probably give that like an A-. Just because, you know, I don't know who might slip or who might be around 16 that I'd rather have than Patrick Williams.
Inevitably, somebody falls. You know, usually there's
someone
that falls. Like Michael Porter Jr. or whoever.
Correct.
Kevin Porter Jr. even last year fell quite a bit. So.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that there might be a guy like that. And you know, I haven't run a million simulations of the draft, so I'm not exactly sure where everybody's needs are in that light. But I think that you know, you're getting two guys that I think could immediately help out the team, which is important. And
yep.
and ultimately you're getting maybe the guy who fits better than anybody in the draft at your than any other draft prospect for your team at five, which I think is good value yeah. for Vassell. So I think it would be a lot of fun to bring those two guys in as guys that can immediately make an impact, especially on the defensive end, which is where we really need rookies to be able to step in and play right away.
Yeah. But so I have a quick question because I don't really know the answer to this. But so say we get the Brooklyn pick and the lottery has it at 16. What's the high? Do you know what the highest that pick can even jump up to? Because it has a percentage of getting one, right? Like a 1% chance.
No, so that pick's actually outside of the lottery. The lottery is the top four.
Oh, yes.
Is the top
oh, yeah.
14 teams. So right now
we wouldn't get it if it was in the lottery. That's right.
Correct. And so I'm pretty sure that.
So 16 would be the highest we would get with that pick. Otherwise, if they end up not making the playoffs, then we would fall out. We wouldn't get that pick, and we'd get future picks. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think that we might also be able to get it at 15, depending on where. Yeah, we could get it at 15 as well in case the magic
the
were to jump. And, you know, I think that yeah. if we get the pick, it's probably more likely that we get it at 15 than 16. And the reason why I think that is because, you know, the Magic are only a half game behind the Nets in the standings. And if Kyrie and yeah. KD aren't playing, but the
Magic falls down.
Right. But
bit.
The Magic, you know, still have everybody. And minus Jonathan Isaac, cause he had season ending surgery, but yeah. I could feasibly see a world in which the Magic jumped them. I just hope that, you know, the Wizards don't play John Wall. I mean, I love John Wall. I'd love to see him
play. John Wall is my favorite player in the NBA. So.
but from a Timberwolves perspective, you just hope that the
yeah,
Wizards
don't
play him
Wall
because
play.
the Wizards are like 5.5-6 games back. They're exactly 6 games back from the Nets. But who knows? I mean, if the Nets free fall in those 8 games and the Wizards play really well and
luckily
their offense
it's only
is just
8
on
games
one,
though.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. A lot it'd have to go really wrong, but it could happen, so we'll see. But I think we'll end up probably having that selection at 15. So
yeah, but John Wall was lobbying for the Wizards to sign DeMarcus Cousins now to come back for the playoffs.
Oh,
so
I'd love that BBN duo
that
back together.
Yeah, but that could really that could affect it too. I mean, if you, all of a sudden if John Wall for some reason decides he's coming back, you bring in Boogie Cousins. There's a better chance there that the Nets end up falling out. But also,
I mean, yeah, I think that team's better than Orlando. That team's better than Brooklyn. That team would probably be close to as good as Philly, the way Philly was playing down the stretch. Obviously not as much talent, but if that team turns it on and plays yeah. well together, I mean, they could go 6-2 or 7-1. Who knows?
But the rough thing is, well, not rough, but Brooklyn still does have Dinwiddie, Allen, LeVert. I think they're good enough to win. I think just 3 games and
right.
they're in.
Yep.
Like the Magic would have, or not the Magic, the Wizards would have to go undefeated. And I think if the Nets lost 2, there'd be a tiebreaker and we'd have to see what happens. But yeah.
Yeah,
like,
but the thing that I get a little bit worried about is that you'd have it. So let's say the Magic jumped the Nets. If,
mm-hmm.
so then the Nets are like, 2.5 or 3 games ahead of the Wizards.
Wizards.
When the season ends, then they have a playoff. So
oh,
if you're within 3.5 games, I think is what the number is, then they have a playoff, and the team that's high in the higher seed, so in this case it'd be the Nets, would only have to win once. But then if the Wizards beat them 2 games in a row, then the Wizards jump the Nets, and the Nets are out of the playoffs, and then the Nets would then be in the lottery. So
sort of like a double elimination.
Correct, and then they'd keep that pick, and we'd get 2 second round picks next year or something like that. I don't know
yeah.
what the conveying is, but there's definitely a path to the Wizards getting that pick. But like you said, you know, you just got to bank on, you know, Dinwiddie, LeVert, Harris, Allen.
Torian
Prince,
Jordan.
Right? Some of those guys, some
yeah.
of those guys, just getting them 3 or 4 wins.
Yeah, I hope we get both so we can make a trade with one of them. But say the Brooklyn pick doesn't convey this year, and you think that we trade our pick and then
we
just could. Select nobody in the first? Oh, we can't. Then.
We
oh, Stepien and Rule, right?
Yeah, because we yep. traded our pick next year
pick
to
last year.
To Golden
yep.
State. And the nice thing is that. it doesn't matter if you trade a pick that you get. So like we have two this year, we can trade either pick.
It doesn't have to be our pick.
Correct. Our original pick. Correct.
Yep. Okay.
So.
And that makes sense.
Yeah, which is kind of the nice thing about the flexibility option of if you have two picks, but we'll see what happens with the Nets. So.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on. I think we got enough on Williams and Vassell so the listeners can get a little bit more of an understanding of who they are and how they would fit on the team and maybe some of their strengths and weaknesses. But I think that pretty much should.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.